Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show, Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2421. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing childhood abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate, counselor, and life coach from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening. So welcome. We encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The number is 646-595-2118. Again, it's 646-595-2118. And tonight's special guest is Alexandria Dean from Franklin, Tennessee. She experienced childhood abuse, but no longer describes herself either as a victim or as a survivor. She is redeemed. I love it. People say that those who have been hurt like this can never get over this and are damaged for the rest of their lives. Alexandria is living proof that kind of talk is a lie. There is life after trauma, and life does not stop because the challenges come, even if it comes repeatedly. So I'm going to stop there and let her tell the rest of her bio herself, and let's introduce her. Hi, Alexandria.
Hi. Thank you.
How are
so
you
much
this evening?
For having me. Fantastic. My fame is responsive, blessed, and highly favored.
I love it. I love
yes.
it.
Yes.
I love it. Awesome. So
the way I see
so
it,
many...
every day after 15 has been a blessing. So,
Sorry. I can't wait to hear about it. So what we're going to do is I'm going to let you talk for about 10 minutes into your story, and then we'll go to the panel. And then we'll come back to your story and go back to the panel, and that's how we'll do it. We'll break it up every 10 minutes.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm going to let you take it from the beginning.
Okay.
And if you need help, just let me know, and I'll guide you along.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you. I am 52 years old, so these things happened a very long time ago. But it still happens today in most cities, in most little towns across the world, actually. When I have a book that's out, and it's called From Heaven to Hell and Back a few times, and it is all about what I'm about to tell you. My father was the product of incest. His mother was raped by her father, and he was the result. So his mother was also his his sister, and his father was also his grandfather, right?
Wow.
So that makes me my own cousin. Brings a whole new meaning to, yeah, I am my own best friend. my mother also had a lot of trauma in her childhood. Her father was also sexually abusive. So that brought in a whole family dynamic. I typically say that my father didn't like me from the beginning, and I'm not certain if it was that he didn't like me as much as it was that he was afraid of what he'd do to me. So when my mother was 7 months pregnant, he was seen by actual cousins beating her, not her, but the belly, which, you know, I was there. Yeah. So then it was a bigger disappointment when I was not the boy they were hoping for. And so that just kind of complicated things a little more. But I was a tomboy growing up. My earliest memories of abuse by my father was I was in diapers when he was sexually assaulting me. Yeah. And that was fairly regular. He also suffered from paranoid schizophrenia. So life was really interesting. My impression was that everything talked, but I just couldn't hear anything. The walls, the dogs, the animals. And I said that to my older sister one day, and she laughed. Oh, my goodness, she laughed so hard. She says that, no, that's just a dad thing. And that you're not crazy. He's the one who's kind of off his rocker a little bit. I also wanted to say that I live in the present, and I go back to help others in the present to understand how I journeyed through this. So I think it's important that I make sure I say that in the beginning so that people understand that these things did happen to me, and they were tragic, and I've worked through a lot of it so that I am healthy today enough to go back and share this. So going forward, my older sister was not my father's biological daughter. He adopted her, and then he started abusing her as well. And then we had a younger brother who was born, and it was an understanding between my sister and I without even, you know, really speaking of it. We just had this knowledge and knowing that we had to protect him. And so we would take abuse in order to keep him protected. You know, we later discovered just spoiled him a little more. He was a boy. Yeah. But it was, he's a wonderful brother, and gladly would lay down his life for his sisters as well. So,
That's beautiful.
Yes, it is. My mother was very angry. As an adult, I can see a lot more of things than I did when I was a child, and I understand a lot more of the dynamics that went into what my father did and what my mother's responses were. So my father played his own daughters against his wife, essentially, which I'm quite certain was mimicking exactly what his father, grandfather, did with his wife.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And yes, as a result, my sister and I wound up usurping our mother's position, which created a whole lot of other dynamics. We felt as though we were equals to her instead of being the children that we were supposed to be. And yeah, that created a lot of things.
So let me stop you there.
Sure.
Let me stop you there, and we'll go to the panel. That's a good place to stop. I got to tell you that the generational trauma that I hear in your story is so similar to mine. I traced mine back on both sides for four generations. So it's just we're starting to see that generational trauma is such a big thing. So let me go to my wonderful co-host, Joe in Oregon. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thank you. Hi, Alexandria.
Hello,
thank you so much for being here and for talking with us. You sound very solid right now, and I think that it comes from a lot of work that you've done for yourself, because when you introduced that you're your own aunt or something, I don't know, it just blew me away.
Yeah.
Cousin. Okay. That just, I was trying to trace that. Anyway, you had, I understand the dynamics of pitting one child against another or against a parent and things. And I was wondering, while you were experiencing that, you probably did not have the depth of understanding that you had now. So was it something that you just learned to deal with, or were you taking any of that on as because you deserved it or were bad?
I think it was a combination of everything. I saw the dynamics with my older sibling, and recognized some things, but at the same time, I was just trying to avoid all the abuse as best I could. Uh-huh. And so I didn't really gain clarity until much later, about 6 years later, when my parents divorced, things really started getting, I had some reprieve to process some things. Illegitimately,
I like that.
But it was still, I was still able to process a lot of things that, in some healthy fashion, but for the most part, it was still rather illegitimate in nature.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Uh-huh. I look forward to hearing some more. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Great question. Okay, we're going to go to Southern Belle Darlene in Tennessee. Hi, sweetheart.
Hi, I'm a little bit hoarse, so I won't be talking that much tonight because I've been talking a good bit today, so my throat's a little bit hoarse, but I still wanted to come in. But you're very strong and courageous to tell your story, and thank you. And they do tease a lot about the family tree not having any branches. They teased my ex-husband because his cousin, they married first cousin, so, But with rape of a child that I had when I was a teenager, it was my stepbrother. There was no blood relation, so I know how a lot of that hurts you as well.
Thank you. Truly, thank you. And hello, Darlene.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay, we're going to go to William in Alabama. Hi, William. William there?
There I am.
Hi, William.
Hi. Yeah, it's a very interesting story and things, and that happens, and there's a lot of cases like that, and I've seen a lot of it because being involved with the court systems and stuff, and you see a lot of that. But a lot of people don't want to get into it because of the situation with the families. So there's some problems with some of that. But
yes,
a lot of problem, as you well know.
Yes.
But it's glad that you're talking about the subject and stuff, too, to get it out there. Because a lot of that happens in families and stuff, and a lot of people aren't really aware of it because it's kind of a taboo subject.
Yes, very.
So they like to avoid
then.
It. Yeah, especially I'm a little older than you, but I'm in the same time periods. These are kind of, you can kind of say.
Yeah.
So I understand that with the family. Anyway, thanks for telling your story, and I'm glad you're here to tell it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
William. Yeah, it's amazing. This is why we do the radio shows, because people don't want to see it, they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to believe that it's as prevalent as it is. And it's the sad fact. So I'm going to let you take up where you left off and keep going.
Okay.
You've been wonderful.
Thank you. So when I was 9 years old, my mother had left my father several times and come back because there was still a lot of dynamics between my father and my older sister, who's 7 years older than I am. And so she finally left completely when I was 9 years old, which was about 4 years after I came to know Jesus as my Lord and Savior at a vacation Bible school at a Baptist church. Yes. The interesting thing to that was there was, I call her my guardian angel, but there was an imaginary friend that I had prior to that, and she played a very interesting role in abuse after I came to know the Lord as my Savior. My father included bestiality this one time with the family dog in abuse against me. And as a result, I wound up screaming, "I hate you," and then received the only real beating I ever received from my father. That was pretty intense, and it left me unable to sit for quite a while. But I ran upstairs to my bed. Later, I was being held by, I saw this later on in when I was had a screaming match with the Lord as an adult, and screaming, you know, "Where were you in the midst of all this? You said you'd never leave me nor forsake me." Yeah. So, but I had a few more explosive words in there that gave it a bit of a oomph. And I figured, "You're God, you can take it."
Yep, you're right.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah, sure enough, he did, and he answered me too. I saw that moment afterwards. I was looking out into my room, seeing me being held by an older version of me, and I immediately knew who that was. That was the angel. I call her the angel. A lot of other people refer to her in other terms, but I know who the Lord is to me, and I know the Lord, and the Lord knows me. So because anything other than an angel would not tell me how family is supposed to function, and then have the fruit of that with who I am today. you know? So I was sitting there sobbing uncontrollably, and she was crying harder than I was and telling me how a father was supposed to function with a daughter, how a mother was supposed to be with a daughter, how siblings were supposed to be, because the abuse also included making me do things with my siblings. And so these are things that she was telling me about love and how it was supposed to be, and that this isn't necessarily how it was. You know, this isn't healthy, that this is wrong. And so I, when I saw this, I, as the adult me looking back, and this was the answer the Lord gave me when I was screaming out, you know, where were you? And my, without even thinking, you know, with just the next blink, I was like, how, why me? You know, why did I get this information but my siblings didn't? And immediately I saw my mother's mother on her face before the Lord, crying and praying for me and for my sisters and my, my brother and my sister. And I saw my mother's oldest aunt on her face crying out before the Lord, praying for me as well and for my sister and my brother. And then I was like, well, you never did leave me. And this was the answer to those outcries to the Lord. And I was humbled, and I, with great gratitude, thanked the Lord for my grandmother and for my aunt and their prayers, because I know that had a great deal to do with who I am today, and how I was able to recognize things that wasn't healthy. And so moving on beyond that, I was 9 years old when my parents divorced. I saw it as a great relief. No more daily or, you know, regular abuse from my father. So from 9 until I was 11 years old, there was this great reprieve. And my mother had come to know Jesus as her Lord and Savior too. And she was a single mother in the 70s with an 8th grade education. Neither one of my parents made it out of the 8th grade. Yeah. And so with nothing more than an 8th grade education, she had to provide rent and electric and food and all this stuff for a teenage daughter, a tween, or coming up on tween, and then, you know, a little boy on probably less than minimum wage. And so she returned to a lifestyle that she once knew and began prostituting. And then began to prostitute my sister. And this was how rent and everything was paid. Yes. When I turned 11 years old, my sister went to go live with her grandfather because her grandmother passed away. She had graduated from high school and from nursing school, and that left a vacancy in this supply of income that was just not acceptable. And so my mother had taken the doorknob off of my door, my bedroom door, and was walking around with it, smacking it in her hand. And I'm like, well, why are you doing that? And she quickly turned on her heels, said, you'll find out, and put it on where it would lock me into the room. For the longest time, I did not remember my sister actually leaving. I knew she left, but I never actually remembered her leaving until probably a couple years ago, because I was locked into the room with the pimp for 3 days when she left. And that was my introduction into being trafficked by my mother. I was 11 years old, and I couldn't sit down at school. It hurt to stand. It hurt to sit. It hurt to just be. And it was very agonizing. Not long after that, she started giving me drugs. I don't know. I mean, I was 11 and really not very street savvy at that point. So I didn't know what all was given to me. I knew alcohol was involved and pills were involved and other things too, but even some needles. But for the next 2 years, I was drugged and to make me more pliable and to not have me say anything. I know that many people knew, but nobody stood up and said anything. They were afraid of my mother. And that's been a problem for centuries in our country and around the world, is that the righteous men are not standing righteously, and righteous women aren't standing righteously. And that needs to change. We need to get stronger and stand, because our children and our country and our people are in great need of people to stand up and say, no, this is wrong.
What is it? Evil prospers when good men do nothing, right? And we're going to take a break here. This is a perfect place to stop. And I love what you said. That is so true. And I am so sorry for what you had to go through. But when I see the person you are today and all you've accomplished, I know why God allowed you to go through what he went through. And he didn't put you through it.
Yes.
But
exactly.
He allowed it to happen for free will. And
yes.
So let's go to the panel. We're going to go to Joe in Oregon first. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thank you. Alexandria, I admire you for keeping your faith through all that. I didn't find my faith till I was 63 years old. So I admire you for going through that and coming out whole. It just feels like you're whole now. But so did you ever feel you had any control over anything, or was it just you? Because before you had said that you were trying to sort of stay out of being hurt, you know, sort of stay away from being hurt, and now you're put right in the middle of it. Did you dissociate? Did you learn any other ways of getting? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Wasn't present for a lot of things.
Okay.
And it was very overwhelming. So I did disassociate a great deal during many acts.
Great.
Because my mother participated also when paid to do so.
Oh.
And that, I think, was the ultimate, betrayal.
Oh.
And it was bad enough that it was happening, but then to participate for money is, I have forgiven both of my parents. That doesn't mean that what was done was right. In fact, forgiveness is an acknowledgement that a wrong has occurred. And that I'm choosing to surrender my judgment for God's judgment, whether I can see that happen or not. And the freedom that comes in that, and the evidence of that, is being able to move towards somebody with compassion and with love, whether it's the same person that you've forgiven or someone else who has that same situation going on. Is bitterness and resentment are fruits of unforgiveness. Criticism is also a fruit of unforgiveness. So, what she did is absolutely wrong. And there's...
But you don't want to carry that around anymore.
No. Yeah. And when I recognized that it made a big difference, and I forgave her in the midst of it, I also took that quite a bit and got angry. And but I also I recognized what had happened to bring her to such decisions, which is it still blows my mind to this day that I came to those conclusions then. So I had compassion for her, but you know, the abuse would continue and the nonstop would continue, and it was very hard to process. And yeah, I got real angry. I was very angry for a very long time. But I also really
that.
Docile too. Very passive aggressive, I guess you could say.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm interested in hearing how you've moved past that. And so thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, we're going to go to Darlene in Tennessee. You there, Darlene? Darlene, hello? Okay, we'll come back to Darlene. Okay, we're going to go to William in Alabama.
Yeah, Darlene said she may have a sore throat, so she may just sit back and listen.
Yeah, maybe.
So, that's what she was telling me earlier.
Yeah.
That she might do, because I know her. She's just up the road from me.
Oh.
Even though I'm in Alabama and she's in Tennessee. So.
Wow.
Yeah, we know Darlene well, so she's fine.
Yeah.
I hope you feel better, Darlene.
Yeah. So, the story and the things, it takes a lot to get, you know, things to pass over that. And you're playing in some dangerous territory when you're dealing with pimps and things like that.
Yes.
Which I'm sure you know. Especially you get into pimps, drugs, and things. Because, see, I came from the south side of Chicago. I know a little bit about some of that the heroin addicts and the things and the girls that walk the streets and the guys that run them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money and stuff involved in stuff like that that you wouldn't think.
Yes. And they are they are being trafficked. No one... there's less than 1% of people in particular, but less than 1% that actually choose and want to work on the streets like that, that actually enjoy it. The less than 1%. Nobody actually chooses to do that. And I think that is the biggest area of education that is needed is recognizing the grooming that occurs before these people, whether they are children or adults that are on the streets doing this, that they are groomed to that point and they are coerced. And that is one of the biggest education areas that we need.
Yeah, so true.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you, William. And so I am so curious to see how you got out of this and where it led you.
Yeah. So when it began, I was in the tail end of fifth grade. Sixth grade came and went, and I really don't remember a whole lot. So I was about 13 years old, and in the seventh grade when it was decided that I would need to be detoxed because it was becoming very evident that there was a problem here, and it was drawing attention that they did not want to have to deal with. So I was detoxed in my own bedroom, but with my mother. And it was just her and I, as far as I recall. Well, the neighbor was brought in from across the hall to come and pray I had been begging my mother to take me to the emergency room. I thought I was going to die. And there were times when I wanted to. But at the end of the day, I didn't. And I came through it and decided I was never, ever, ever, ever going to do anything to put myself in that position ever again. Later on, the worst I ever did on my own was go through the normal senioritis and get drunk on the weekend. And even then, that was short-lived. As I decided,
good.
You know, I don't ever want to experience that. So, 13, I was detoxed in my own room. Mind you, we would go to the streets of D.C., which I was third generation trafficked on the streets of D.C. My grandmother, 90%
incredible,
was trafficked on the streets of D.C. My mother, of course, was on the streets of D.C. And then I was on the streets of D.C. I was also trafficked to Capitol Hill. In
goodness.
Some of the
wow.
offices there. We'd make a day trip or two to New York City, and sometimes that would happen. But most of the time, and the majority of the time, they came through my window. We lived in an apartment next to the boiler, so they could hide in the shadows of the boiler, which was on the outside of the building, and they would come in through my window and out through my door. No money ever changed hands with me. Even though I was now sober, I was still required to work, and I was still required to go to school, do the normal school things, play soccer, do the cheerleading thing. So these other activities still occurred in the midst of all this other stuff. And I was
became
choked
normal.
Out. Yeah, it very much. Plus, we went to church and we did Wednesday night Bible study. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Incredible.
Looking back, I went through a period of time where why didn't anybody know? Why didn't anybody say me?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I took those questions to the Lord, too, for which I did receive an answer. If people recognize that something isn't right and they don't quite know what's not right, but they know something's not right, and they don't investigate it, they just keep sweeping it under the carpet because it costs them more to ask than to not ask. And if they're not sure, there's the excuse not to ask. Well, I don't know for sure, and I don't want to open up a can of worms and then get myself in trouble. So it's just easier not to say anything. And then when things are really, that really isn't right there. Do I want to really invest into saying something at this point and then make it, where I'm in trouble or this, how is this going to affect me? Well, the problem with that is you're not looking at the child that is suffering for this, this me right. attitude. Because if you are looking at you and you are not looking at the child and you're definitely not looking at the Lord, for there is no shame in standing up for the Lord, but you're looking at the shame of what may come upon you or somebody else, that is, you're not looking in the right spot. Therefore, you're not taking the right stand. So I've forgiven the ones that should have said something and chose not to, police officers, judges, lawyers, people in authority, whether they're pastors or public leaders of any kind,
mm-hmm.
and they've chosen not to say
right.
something for their own benefit. And I've
right.
I've made it a point to say I forgive you. I mean, I don't always know the faces, but I've made it a point to tell the Lord I forgive them. And because then the question is often asked, why didn't you say something?
Mm-hmm.
You get it 1,000 times worse
right,
when you do
right,
say something.
Right.
Or you step out of line. Mind you, my mother was so controlling. We used one sheet of toilet paper for number one and two sheets for number two. No more, no less. She put the toothpaste on the toothbrush. Yeah. She dressed me every morning. I was not allowed to wear any pants, only allowed to wear skirts. And that was a problem for me. So everything was controlled. Everything was, there was an enormous amount of brainwashing. It took
mm-hmm.
me into
sure.
my 40s before I could actually start making decisions on my own, where, where I wasn't questioning myself constantly, which actually this is very typical of human trafficking. All this control and not being able to make decisions and it being overwhelming to make a decision.
Right.
Because you're always afraid that somebody's going to punish you for it, whether yourself or
mm-hmm.
somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So at 14, I was 13, almost 14 years old, and we were coming back from my mother's father's place, and we were hit by a drunk driver. I wound up in the hospital for 9 days. They thought I'd broke my neck. This gave me the first time in forever that I was safe all the way through the night. Although I was afraid and terrified that they would come into the hospital room and I would have to work. So I really didn't have a whole lot of reprieve in that, but I was being hounded by the nurses, which was so much nicer than what I was.
Mm-hmm.
Getting.
Sure.
This also gave me time to really evaluate what was going on, and for me to recognize, you know what, I actually have a choice in this. I can choose not to deal with this and not to have to go through this, which wound up, I began to have a fight at that point. And I was starting to become a bit of a problem for them. But I figured, you know what, there's not much more you can do to me. It's all been done.
Mm-hmm.
Been choked out more times than I can even begin to imagine. Had weapons put in places nobody should ever even think about, and just rushed into a roulette. It was an awful lot for a teenage girl to deal with, and
trauma.
Preteen even. Yeah. So when that happened, I wound up running away. My brother was like, "I'm not staying. I'm coming with you."
Wow.
And so we ran away, didn't make it very far, but we did walk about 30 miles. And we wound up being brought back. Surprisingly, my mother was somewhat kind about it. I did get a beating over it, but it was not nearly what I anticipated. So the Lord's graces were there. The second time I ran away, it was by myself. My mother and I had got into an altercation. To this day, it still hurts my heart that I actually struck her. Though all that was done, because
sure.
I discovered that, her honor, whether she chooses to disrespect it or not or dishonor it or not, is placed there by God, not by man. And it was, that is something that the Lord established. And that's what hurt my heart more than anything else. And she knew that that's how I saw things. So she would manipulate that too. And anyway, I wound up leaving. And social services had stepped in because I ran into my sister who had been estranged from us for a time. And she called the police. Which I was like, okay, do you know what you are bringing down? And she, of course, she knew. And I wound up going to, it was a blessing. It was a huge blessing. There again, she was still looking out.
Can we stop here? We're going to stop right there. We've been way over 10 minutes, so and then we're going to come back. Remember where we were. So let's go to my wonderful co-host, Joe, in Oregon.
Okay. Wow. This is a very this is sort of ringing me out here. Very emotional story. I'm not triggered. I'm just it's very emotional, and you think you're just going to get some help, and then, you know, it doesn't, and all that kind of thing. But when you were in the hospital following the accident, were you ever able to tell anyone, any of the nurses or anything, what you had been through or what was going on?
No. My sister actually worked there. Yes. So... it was, I was too scared to say anything because their connections were all over the place. So they, it was, I never knew who to trust and who I could talk to because there were, you know, a lot of customers is the best way to say it. Yeah.
Whoa.
So they're right. So some of them were all over the, you know, it was all over the place. I mean, some of them were construction workers. Some of them were actually parents of the children that I went to school with. And sometimes they would bring the, you know, they would, my son needs to, you know, sow his royal oats, so to speak. So there was that also. And there were cops and just a lot of different people. Yeah.
So you really didn't have a reprieve of much.
No.
I mean, I am so sorry. Wow.
Yeah. It created who I am, and I like who I am. Never used to be able to say that.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yep. I'm glad you do, though. I am very glad you do, because, that's a lot to go through. So I'm looking forward to where you left off is going to take us. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay. Let's see if Darlene wants to say anything or not. Darlene, do you want to talk or are you still short? Okay, I'm going to take it. Your throat's still sore. Okay, we're going to go to William in Alabama. Hi, William.
Hey. Yeah, she's been doing good on this story and stuff. And know that there had to be a lot to get her out of that. She had a lot to overcome and all that with that stuff.
Yeah.
Always do.
Yes.
Because I see a lot of that too, but I've been on the border and I've been in Chicago and I've been a few places.
Yes.
So I've seen a lot of stuff and know a lot of stuff that went on. But at least you're out telling the story and making people aware of this stuff.
Yes. Thank you.
So I'm glad you're here and telling it.
Thank you.
That's part of what
Thank
keeps
you.
It going, isn't it? The secrecy, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Right. So thank you, William. Okay, now we have about 39 minutes left, so I'm really anxious to hear how you got out of what you were talking about before we stopped.
Yeah. So when the police were called, social services stepped in. I became a ward of the court. I went to live with my father, and I figured, oh, yay. One is a whole lot easier to deal with than multitudes. Well, my first weekend back to my mother's, as even though my father went in custody, my mother still had weekend visits. So every other weekend, from the time I walked into the door until the time it was to leave, I was made to work the whole time. I would come home to my father's, and I would sleep and oversleep. And so I was still dealing with him on top of dealing with what my mother was doing.
Oh,
and
God.
So, yes, my father raped me, and I told him, you ever touch me again, I will tell the whole world, I will shout it from the mountaintop. And so he packed up all my belongings and took me in the middle of a snowstorm to the guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem happened to be a woman lawyer that gave me hope, you know. There's a woman
finally.
In power. Yes. So I wound up in my first foster home, which the trafficking still continued because I lived across the street at this point from my mother. Yes. There was abuse in the first foster home. The foster uncle made a pass at me and propositioned me. And so I told, which was outside of what normally would happen, but I was not in that environment 24/7 like I had been.
Right.
So I'd started gaining in a bit of strength. So I wound up running away the day before my birthday. Was missing on my birthday. Went to school the next day, even though I was still missing. Get called into the principal's office. The principal's like, I understand that you ran away. Are you still, you know, missing? Why did you come to school? You know, most kids don't do that. I said, well, sir, it's safe in school. It's not safe out there. And he didn't say anything else. Called my guardian ad litem. And I went back into the youth shelter again. Well, my first round in the youth shelter, I met this beautiful young lady who taught me to stand up for myself. And I believe that is one of the major reasons why I was able to speak up when there was abuse in the first foster home, because she demanded it of me. She's still a good friend to this day. When I was in the shelter the second time, there was actually a young girl there that was a satanic believer. That was interesting. And so I wound up going into another foster home outside the county, which was unheard of, but it was in a middle to upper income class neighborhood, which made it virtually impossible for my mother to continue doing what she was doing. Along with this new status, the foster parents had a standard, and wasn't easily manipulated, which gave me, for the first time in my life, a full night's sleep without terror of any kind. I was safe for the first time in my life. I was 15 years old, and nobody had access to me anymore. Not my father, not my mother, and none of the people in the environment there. How I was able to get out, which was an answer to prayer from the Lord. I begged to be out. So that began, I wound up graduating from high school on time, bottom fourth of the class, but I graduated on time with all the other people I entered school with. And, in a different county, but that still amazes me, which I was the first of my biological family to graduate from high school. I later was the first to graduate with my associate's degree. And I am still 40 credits shy of my bachelor's degree in any direction. But I believe
that's
that'll eventually come. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So with that, since then, I joined the military, left the military, was raped in the military, and then got married, had two beautiful daughters, and right after I had completed the book, which was about 13 years ago, not long after that, I divorced my ex of 20 plus years. As my girlfriend says, my husband. I thought that was an interesting little term. During all that time, I met a wonderful couple who really took me under their wing, and mentored me, and without whom I would not be the woman I am today. I am 100% positive of that. I believe the Lord strategically placed them in my life, and I call them mom and dad. They call me their daughter. And a lot of what I know and have worked through was because of my mom and her impact in my life. I also give credit to my biological mother. I believe the Lord gave her the right to have blessed me with all the tools that I needed to walk through all the things that both of them put me through. And without those tools, you know, of going to church every Sunday in spite of everything, and, you know, having us read the Bible and the other things that weren't as horrible as all the other stuff, I believe had a great impact in my life and gave me the tools I needed to successfully come through. So when we can embrace the whole thing, not just bits and pieces that we like and, you know, toss the things we don't like.
Right.
And we embrace all of it, then you can truly let things go. And I believe that is a big portion of what has brought me to where I am today.
How did you let it go and forgive? That's a big thing with survivors and listeners.
Yeah, right. One of the biggest things, because my abusers were my father and my mother, I asked, I recognized, you know, when I asked the Lord, why did you give me parents that would do such hideous things to me and then turn and make me do things that violates your laws and your, you know, what you've set forth? I don't understand. Help me understand this. so he did. King David in the story in the Bible was being chased by the current king, which was King Saul, and who was trying to kill him. And David and his captain of his army comes along and stumbles across King Saul napping. It was the middle of the night. And David cut the hem of his garment of King Saul. He goes up on the hilltop and yells, "Your Majesty, you missing something?" I'm ad-libbing, of course. And he's waving the cloth that he cut off of the king's garment. And the king is like, "Dude, why didn't you kill me? I would have killed you. Why didn't you kill me?" David says, "Who am I to touch the anointed by God?"
Right.
And that gave, I clearly felt the Lord go, "Hey, can you choose what parent is going to birth you? What mother is going to birth you, and what father is going to provide you with the seed to make who you are? Can you say, I want to birth this particular child with that man?" No. That is a divine right by God. Their sin was not necessarily against me, but God. I felt the repercussions of it took all the wind out of the sails of my anger, because I was freed from that. I was able to then see, you know what? That makes forgiveness a whole lot easier. Because it really isn't, you know, I felt it, yes, but y'all did really much bigger things with God there than you did with me. And because I can't make the hair on my head grow. I try and take all the vitamins I can. But that is not my divine right. That's God. So when I came from that perspective, because it's easy to get caught up in the, you know, "Oh, I tripped over a rock. That stupid rocket got me every time, you know, and I just want to sit in the mud puddle that I tripped into and throw the big hissy fit and stay there." But what good is that doing me? What good is that doing the people around me that I love, that love me? If I'm stuck and I remain stuck in those spots, it doesn't do any good. I have to continue on for my peace of mind and for those that I love. And it's the hardest road is generally the right road. Because if it's too easy to sit, because it is easy to sit and wallow in self-pity, it's hard to get up and keep going. But when you make it a practice to get up and keep going, life becomes a lot easier. And there's a lot to whine about.
Yes. Yes. All right. We're going to stop there because it's been about 15 minutes almost. So we're going to go first to my beautiful co-host, Joe.
Thank you. Oh, Alexandria, you are wonderful. You have such a depth of compassion and understanding. And, I just love that. I love that. And, you know, of anybody, you know, a lot of us, would have, you know, could have said, "Hey, you know, I had this rough life, and you know, I'm just going to sit in that for a while." But you pushed on, and I think that is so wonderful. And I am so glad that you had the angels of your new parents, your new mom and dad, to show you another way, a different way that parenting could be. And I'm just all goosebumps. I'm just so you know, just so happy, and you are so, the term I use is healthy, which, you know, just to me means you have this understanding. You have this depth of knowing who you are and how you fit in this whole world, and that is amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah. This is, I must read your book. I got to read your book because this is just, this is
I'm really so happy to hear your strength. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe. Okay. We'll see if Darlene wants to say anything. Darlene, do you want to talk? Just say yes or no.
Hey, you're one strong cookie. I can't say too much. I'm sorry. My throat, I can't say too much, but we're talking too much today.
okay.
But anyway, you're one strong cookie, and I look up to you, and I can't wait to read your book either.
Amen. Well, you know, it takes one to know one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks, darling. Okay, William. You're on.
Okay. Yeah, she is one tough cookie to survive all that and keep going and come out of it like that. And that's a good thing, is she's overcome a lot of that and moved in a positive direction from there. There's a lot that don't move in a positive direction, and that's another whole issue. But I'm glad that she's on the positive side and moved further on.
So, William, I was thinking the same thing. She's been through so much trauma, and she gave up the drugs. She finished high school. She didn't have any really bad coping skills. It amazes me, too.
Yeah, that's what's amazing is that she found a way of getting through all that on her own, really, kind of in some ways, except for the people that were placed in the right spots to help her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My husband would have some different viewpoints. I'm sorry, my ex might have a different view, but because a lot of healing happened during the marriage, and he caught a lot of flack. I was one angry woman for a very long time. I thank you for the accolades, but it took me a lot to get to this healthy place.
Sure. Okay, thank you, William. And now I want to hear more about, I want to hear the end of where you are now, and then about your JR house. We have about, I'm just going to let you know, we have about 20 minutes left.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. So I published the book about a little more than a year ago. I was going to go with a publishing company, but I didn't have the money to come up with to do that. So I self-published on Amazon. At that time, I also formed a couple of businesses, Alexandria Dean Incorporated, which is a for-profit business, which is owned by JJ Business Enterprises Incorporated, which is a for-profit business, both of which, once they're up and running, they're not going anywhere just yet. 20% of the quarterly profits will go to JR House. JR House is a nonprofit that I've formed that's currently folded under the church that I am ordained through, which is House Fellowship Ministries. Wonderful Pastor Danny has really mentored me, and also is a part of my board of directors for JR House. Yes. Now, JR House, JR stands for Jehovah Rapha, which means my God, my healer. And
I love that.
Yes. I figure I want it to represent, without being, you know, in your face with it, but to be as welcoming as the Lord has been and patient as the Lord has been with me, because I've not always been as I am today. I literally went through a period of time where I would walk down any street, anytime, anywhere, and was hoping that somebody would come out and jump me so I could hurt them. That was a very long time ago, but that is how angry I was.
Sure.
That was at least 30 years ago. But that isn't where I am today. Praise God.
Right.
The J.R. House International Incorporated is an organization that exists to assist all of those escaping human trafficking. From the very I need help or just whatever they can do to call out to the redemption process, because the way I see it, and I've been working to redefine victims, survivor, and redeemed. Victim is the during the time in which a traumatic event is occurring and a person is a victim of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Once they've survived that, they are a survivor. Is when you're surviving, you're still not in a safe place. So you're surviving. Once you are safe and you know that you are safe, you are redeemed. That is the definition of redemption.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it also marks, okay, I've passed that point, and it helps you move to the healing portion of life. It's much like when we get a cut in the physical, right? And your body immediately starts to try and heal itself. Well, our mind functions the same way, as well as our spirit. We're designed to promote healing and maintain homeostasis. When you're consistently being cut, your body doesn't have the chance to really get that reprieve to, okay, let's heal. But it still tries. You know, well, it's the same thing with our brain. And so once we are safe, then the healing can truly begin. And so it's good to identify that, because that identifies the need as well. So what we do at JR House, and we have been successful in one rescue, we assisted a mother who was trafficked by her husband. We assisted her in recovering her 9-year-old daughter, and successfully, thank the Lord. And she is now safe, in a safe location, and in the healing process, as well as her daughter. We're still in the midst of another rescue, and that particular rescue was requiring me to be present with the victim, the survivor. She had left, but she was still a survivor. She wasn't able to fully leave because we were in need of lawyers, and we really need the startup funding so that we can complete this rescue. Without that, I don't know how we can complete this rescue. And this precious lady really, really needs us. We were able to sustain being there for 74 days. I was able to go because what we are doing is having a redeemed one go to the survivor to walk the victim, to walk them into safety.
Oh, I love that.
And
that's beautiful.
Yes. And that is essentially what we do. And we've been blessed with other organizations that have come alongside us to assist. And I'd like to give a shout out to them in just a moment.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. So what we do is we rescue. We have a safe home, but we also have other organizations so that they're not locked into one particular place. So they can literally get into safety, where we will also be able to provide case management. We already have people ready to roll. We just need the funding. We will have an aftercare program as well as counseling. All staff will be trained, of course, in trauma-informed training, as well as several other areas. Of need. But that is what J.R. House does. And it the first and the second rescue was all provided by everyday people. This is where my heart is. This is where I get choked up. None of the other stuff chokes me up but this. Everyday people pulled together to pour into these women's lives to bring them to safety. And I thank each and every one of them.
How can someone who is listening that either is in sex trafficking or wants to get involved and help you with the funding in sex trafficking, how do they get in touch with you?
With me?
You
can call 817-841-9304. That is my phone number. It is a Google Voice number, so it will be requiring you to announce your name. If you are currently in immediate danger, please call 888-373-7. That is the Polaris Project. That is the National Human Trafficking Hotline, and they are well-equipped to help you with where you are. You can also text BeFree, which is 233-733. And that is if you are in danger or if you need help or you would like to, wherever you are, you need to get away. They are equipped to help you with that. If you would like to speak with me, my number again is 817-841-9304. You can also find us at J_R_House_Inc. on Instagram. So it's just JR House with underscore in between each letter, the JR and before House and then after House. You can also reach us. I'm on Facebook, so you can reach us on Facebook, JR House, Alexandria Dean. My Facebook, I think it's Alexandria 1 Dean. And I'm also on LinkedIn. Our website is a Wix website. There's a link on my Facebook as well as on Instagram and on LinkedIn. Is kind of long. It's jrhouse.wixsite.com/website. So that's a bit more complicated. But to give a shout out to those. Yes?
No, that, no, I was going to say the program's recorded, so if somebody needs to get that, they can record and replay it. So, if they need to get in touch.
Thank you. And if they'd like to donate, they can go to the website and click on the donate button. Please sign up for our website too, so we can we'll be sending out emails regularly as well. So the Well Path is an organization in California that was instrumental in both rescues. They work to prevent and fight against recidivism offering emergency shelter. They helped us a lot. They've been fabulous. That is a redeemed run organization. That means that it is a survivor led, as what everybody else would say. Marjorie is absolutely fantastic. And hey, girl, I love you. they're working on having their own shelter. That will be a 90-day program. They do offer primary need assistance as well as case management and therapy. They also assist with transportation, too. But they are run out of California. A fantastic organization. There is another organization that has been instrumental with our follow-up that have been really wonderful in assistance as well, and that's NOVA HTI. They are a fabulous group of people that love the Lord, as well as the WellPath too. they are
wonderful.
Not a provider-led program, but they are a wonderful, healthy group of women that just do a lot of outreach, and that is NOVA HTI. And hello, my friends there. I love you guys. We also have another organization called the Galactus. That is a foundation group. It isn't an organization. They were instrumental in a lot of funding. Big T is he is my buddy. I love him dearly. Tracy, I love you. And that's the Galactus. If you'd like to donate there, they are a fantastic organization that is primarily there to give back to the community in which they serve.
Okay.
24/7.
Sorry. I'm going to let you finish your thought, and then I'm going to go to the panel. So go ahead, finish that thought.
Okay. 24/7 Inc. is a fantastic organization that is also run by a redeemed one. They put QR codes everywhere. And it is for those that need help to be able to scan the QR code, because most everyone has a smartphone. They provide information in the QR code to a victim of human trafficking in transit on in their native tongue. So if they scan it, they can choose what language they speak. So this is something that they're putting all over the place. Yes, everywhere they possibly can. Airports, restrooms,
that's
brothels,
wonderful.
Strip clubs. Yes, they are fantastic.
Yeah,
I know some of the
hotels, some of the hotels around here have that. I don't know if it's that group, but there's a group
it
in our area that does exactly that.
Yes, that's 24/7. Incorporated,
right.
And that is a redeemed run program. So please support them. Yeah. And
okay.
I have a couple more, but
I'll
hush.
Yeah, we only have about 7 minutes left, so I want to make sure I get everybody on the panel can say goodbye, and then I want you to have a final thought. So let's first go to my co-host, Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thank you for all you're doing. Bless you, and I'm going to look up your website. I have some ideas, and I just want to give you more time to list off the rest of your helpers. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Thanks. Okay, Darlene, do you have anything you want to say?
Thank you so much for sharing your story. You are very knowledgeable in this, and I was human trafficked as well, sexually. Mm. You know, so
yes.
I know what you're dealing with there. All right, thank
you. My sister. Yes, thank you.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
Mm.
That's right. Here at NASCA, we're all family.
Yes, absolutely.
I got all my sisters.
I mean, Darlene, I'm sorry I cut you off. Did you want to say something?
I was like, I got all my sisters and me.
Mm.
So we are family, you know, I got all my sisters and me.
I love it. Thanks, Darlene. Okay, William.
Yeah, it's very good. She's telling her story and getting things out there. And her book and everything and wish you the best for the future, because I think you're going a long way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, William. Okay, so I'm sorry I cut you off in the middle of your telling about everybody, but I want you to have about 4 minutes, so I want you to have time to do all that.
Mm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. There's another organization that I've come in contact with that I'd like to be working with in Uganda. It's called Rape Hurts Foundation, run by a beautiful woman named Helen. It, too, is a Redeemed One organization. They assist those and educate their community and their country against marriages at 12 years old. It's huge there. Sustain Cameroon also does something very similar, and that is run by a wonderful gentleman named Itali. And I've come in contact with both Helen and Itali, different sides of Africa, but it's one's in Cameroon and the other one is in Uganda, and they are working, and I'm hoping to come together with them on putting together some educational stuff for their people, our people, you know. And then a couple of churches that have been fantastic. Capital Baptist Church has been fantastic and a wonderful supporter of myself, as well as J.R. House. Another one is Faith Assemblies of God, who gave me my first platform to share my story. And I call it my testimony. But I was able to share my testimony for the first time in public and in the church. And thank you to my church, Faith Assemblies of God. And then there's a wonderful brother of mine in Ghana, King Quinish. He is a pastor there that also has he and his wife purchased my book, the first international book purchase. So shout out to my
wife
as well. Yeah. So thank you for allowing me the moment to come back and give a shout out to all these wonderful people. I will they're not currently listed on my website, but I will definitely put them on my website. Also, there's another wonderful book, Can You Keep a Secret, by a wonderful woman, Juanita. She does an organization, I think it's Case by Case. I did not write it down. I'm sorry, Juanita. But she is a beautiful woman from the UK who does some excellent educational stuff, for which I will also put on my website. But thank you, everybody, for this wonderful opportunity. Thank you, Bill, for the invitation. And Linda D, you have been a wonderful hostess. Thank you. And co-host.
What would you say to the listeners right now? What would be your final words to somebody who may be out there and stuck and is afraid to, you know, like you were when you were 11, 12? What would you say to them?
I know that it's scary to speak out. If you can only text 233-733, take that leap of faith and do it. People are there to catch you. And if they're not, you get back up and don't give up. You can and will make it through. I made it through. And if I can do this, you are not alone. There is more with us now than there was when I was a little girl. You have more brothers and sisters out there than you know. We are all here to help you, and we will. I will. Call me, 817-841-9304. I will literally come to where you are.
Thank you,
Alexandra. And for those that are recovering, keep recovering. Don't be satisfied with staying with the status quo. Go the distance. You can do it.
Yes. Thank you so much, Alexandra. You did such a wonderful job. You have an amazing story, and I just want to thank you so much. Good night to all the listeners. Please reach out. Visit NASCA.org as well for lots of resources. So thank you all. Good night and God bless.
Good night and God bless. Thank you.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone.